You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 38, Tony Bedard, number 3, or Whiter Than the Whitest White Man.
Frankie from the Green Lantern Corecast.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm calling you up for the interview. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
All right, good. I have my full roster of teammates here. We'll try to knock this out quick for you.
Okay.
All right, seeing that it's nice to have you back on the show, Tony.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
It's the third time now.
Is it? I'm so, keeping track.
This is Bedard 3.
Personal.
Well, I do want to ask you, seeing that this is the post Flashpoint DCU universe now, how's it going for you? How's your new workload?
I finally settled in. It was pretty hairy while we were doing Flashpoint and gearing up the relaunch. So that was a bit of a load there. But once Flashpoint got out of the way and we really, you know, focused in on exactly how we wanted to do our relaunch. Oh, and my dog is chiming in the background. She has a few thoughts about the relaunch. But anyway, it has definitely all gotten into gear now. And I'm enjoying it between Blue Beetle and Green Lantern New Guardians. It's kind of a neat mix because I've got a lot of cosmic, you know, sci-fi stuff, but it's a balance between the Blue Beetle stuff that takes place on Earth and all the really larger-than-life stuff that's going on in the Green Lantern book.
That's good. I did want to ask that seeing that you're doing the New Guardians for Green Lantern, you're doing Blue Beetle, most of them, as we know, you know, as DC laid it out for us, New Guardians itself and Green Lantern generally will have little to no change. It'll pretty much still be sort of the same as it was before, but Blue Beetle is going to be a completely new playground for you, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that all goes with a general rule that's kind of, you know, emerged from this relaunch, and that is that if there are moments in the history of a character or a series that, you know, that are really important, you know, that are just big turning points, those things haven't been erased by this reboot or relaunch or whatever we want to call it. And so there are a lot of those that you can point to with the Green Lantern books. There's not really that much in that way that you can point to with Jaime Reyes' Blue Beetle. And in fact, the Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle was introduced in the midst of the Infinite Crisis crossover, which was a pretty convoluted thing in and of itself. And it also was really, you know, hooked into the fact that there was two Blue Beetles before it, you know. And so basically, if there's somebody who's new to Blue Beetle and you want to explain Jaime Reyes to them, you don't want to have to then explain the whole dang, you know, crossover and history of, you know, of the DCU. So with Jaime, Blue Beetle number one, we're going to see him the first time that he gets the armor and take it from there. And so if you have no knowledge of Blue Beetle, you're going to be able to just pick that book up and go with it. And at the same time, I loved that last Blue Beetle series. I thought it was one of the best things we published when it was coming out.
Oh, I agree.
A lot of the stuff, you know, the stuff that was working about it, I'm trying to maintain for the new series. You know, a lot of the tone and the essentials of the character of Jaime and Paco and Brenda, you know, I'm trying to keep that as well. We're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, you know.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. How do you balance the previous continuity with and new readers with number one issues?
Well, you know, I think it changes, you know, from book to book. You have to figure out how that balance is going to be struck. You know, so like I was just saying with the Blue Beetle, we're just starting over, you know, from the point where he gets his armor, and we're going with it from there. And there's some things that we're emphasizing more in this Blue Beetle series. Like there's more of an adversarial thing going on between Jaime and his armor. There was some of that going on in the last series, but he kind of settled in pretty quickly, I think, to getting along with that armor and working with it. And we're going to make it a little harder on him this time around. The book was described to me by the editor as Green Lantern meets Spider-Man, and I thought that was great in a nutshell, you know, description. You know, and one of the things about Spider-Man that really defines that character is just how put upon Peter Parker is. You know, nothing goes his way. So we're going to get a little bit more of that going on for Jaime. Now, in the case of Green Lantern, we're going to, in the first issue of Green Lantern New Guardians, there is an opening sequence that recaps, Kyle's origin. So we're going to see Kyle get the ring for the first time from Gambit, but it's still pretty much exactly, you know, as it went down in the previous series. But from there, we're going to jump to the present and you know, take it from there. And basically, things like Blackest Night and all these other adventures that we've been liking in Green Lantern for the last few years still happen, you know, pretty much exactly as you've read them.
All right. Well, let me move on to another person who wants to ask you a few questions. Colton, you can go ahead.
All right, Tony, thanks for coming back on the show.
Yeah, thanks.
One of the things I've wanted to know for a while now, with the conclusion of the Weaponer story arc, we see him join the Sinestro Corps, but he creates a new costume after dropping his original shield, a new shield included. Did he take his White Lantern shield with him or leave it behind? And will we see it again, seeing now all the Corps represent the new Guardians that might be something that come up with the White Lantern energy?
You know, it's funny, but that's a great question because I'm not sure what the answer is. Sometimes, I know that might seem like a strange answer for you, but you know, sometimes something that's up in the air like that, when you come back and revisit the character, you know, you might, your decision on where to go with it is going to, you know, be affected by what happened in the interim, you know. So I kind of feel like he's got that white energy, you know, in his back pocket, so to speak. But if I come back to that character and come up with a new story arc for him, I don't know if it's going to feature that or not, you know, or we might write it, you know, explain it away some other way. I'm not really sure. That's the sort of thing that maybe I might talk through with Jeff and with Eddie, my Braganza, or with Pat McCallum, who's editing New Guardians. You know, it's just the sort of thing that we kind of tabled for now. I don't actually have plans on picking back up on the Weaponer at the moment, but I think once we get through the first year or so of New Guardians, if we do like a Sinestro Corps-centric story, then I think we'd see him again.
I just felt like it could be fitting because, you know, all the different cores represented can combine into that white energy. It could be fitting if he had to face them in some way that could give him kind of an even footing with them.
Yeah, that would be cool. It could be like a, you know, a secret weapon, you know, the sort of thing that they pull out, you know, to deal with something that they can't, you know, overcome by normal means. I hadn't given this a whole lot of thought until you just asked it, but you know, I think I smell a future storyline here.
It's always those little subtle things that you can pick up on and pull out amazing stories with.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, now that we're talking about this, I've just been working up a new villain for the second story arc in New Guardians, and it just came from one little throwaway line in one of Larkley's earlier appearances. I was rereading those issues just to kind of, you know, get a sense of how to write his dialogue. And I saw him mention something about the angels in the Vega system and how they're extinct now. And I thought, oh, there's a story there. Hmm. You know, so sometimes just from little tidbits like that, you know, you can spin, you know, really big stories. You could argue that Jeff did the same thing with some of Alan Moore's stories, because a lot of the stuff, you know, with the Blackest Night and everything,
Tigers,
back to
yes.
That, you know, one story. Yeah, I mean, that he blew that wide open.
it's definitely amazing what you can just pull out.
Yeah.
How stable will the lineup in New Guardians be? Will any characters stay long term, and which ones will rotate out, or is there any kind of stability with the group?
Well, it's looking stable for now, is what I would say. I've got the first year fairly planned out, and then beyond that, it's a lot looser. But right now, the lineup that you're seeing and the covers that have been solicited and stuff is pretty much the lineup I'm going to be dealing with. And New Guardians basically begins with a big mystery. I'm not sure how much I want to give away, but something happens to Kyle that kind of compels him to try and pull together this team from those characters that you've seen. You know, Artillo and St. Walker and Fatality from the Star Sapphire Corps, and also Monk from the Indigo Lanterns, Glomulus from the Orange Lantern Corps, although Larkley is going to figure in there himself a few issues down the line, and so on. That's going to basically be the team. But the way that they pull together, because that's not a natural team by any stretch. they don't have any real, interest in coming together, and forming Voltron or something. It's going to take some time, but this thing that happens in the first issue to Kyle is going to compel them all to have to work together in order to solve this mystery. And you'll see what I mean as the story unfolds. But yeah, that's the team right there. But I'm also not married to that. Like, for example, we just brought up the Weaponer. I had thought about maybe making the Weaponer be the one who represents the Sinestro Corps. And it might be that at some point I swap out Artillo for the Weaponer or one of the other guys. I'm also working on the Green Lantern books. It's funny because I also am reacting to things that are happening in other books. At some point, a couple years from now or something, we might cross them all over again for some, Green Lantern crossover. We're not, rushing into that because I think we're all kind of tired of that at this point. But, that's the kind of thing where that might impact on the storyline and the lineup.
Yeah. Outside of the various core, can we expect any other recurring characters, perhaps anyone calls live outside of work?
Yeah. Soren Ignacio was his girlfriend for the last year or two, and that kind of ended badly as we wound down the last run of Green Lantern Corps. And Sornik is basically Kyle, in pulling together this team for New Guardians, he's going off the reservation. This is not something that the Guardians of Oa want him to do, but it's something that he has to. And so they're going to eventually send Sornik to stop him and bring him in. And so that ought to make for some interesting, confrontations. Gosh, I'm trying to think who else. Like I said, Larkley's is going to be in there. Sade, Gansett's lover, who kind of agreed to become Larkley's slave at the end of Blackest Night. She's also going to figure greatly in the book later on. And we start off on Earth, but much of the first year is going to be out in space, and at some point we'll bring it back to Earth. I don't want to be so divorced from Kyle's actual life of a human being, I'd like to get that working in there too.
Oh, definitely. One of the things that I wanted to ask about was with the whole thing with the JSA and everything being moved to Earth 2, how would that affect Kyle and Natsu's relationship? Because if Jade's always been on Earth 2, then that kind of complicates the reason for leaving.
That's an interesting question, man. one of the funny things about this whole relaunch is I don't know what's going on with the JSA. I know about as much as you do, probably, because I also heard this thing about it being on Earth 2, but nobody's confirmed that or given me anything about that. So, that really does beg a big question because she's such a big part of his life, I think, you guys tell me, who do you think was his one true love out of all the girlfriends he's had? Who was really the one?
Yeah, Jade.
Donna.
Donna would probably have been his biggest love. Jade became the biggest love
Jade,
afterwards.
He proposed to her. I mean, that's true.
She was both his biggest love and his biggest heartbreak.
Yeah, I think that was
second to like Alex.
Donna Troy was just kind of like the first girlfriend he got when he got his new job, you know, and you always date the girl in the office for a little while, and then it's like, this is not going to work out because we're a little too close. And Jade, like, it was, I don't know. Jade, they got engaged. Jade is the Jade.
Yeah, well, and that's who he saw when he looked in the Star Sapphire crystal too. If that's any, you know, if that carries any weight.
Yes, I guess you did answer the question for us.
Yeah, well, but it's funny because, you know, as readers, I think we all, you know, we all have the way that our heart goes, you know, and our view on something like that. But yeah, I got to talk to somebody at the office about this now, and you know what happened to his relationship to Jade now? How's that going to work?
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't thought of it. We should talk more often, fellas.
we're incredibly inspiring. Sadly, one of my favorite books, Rebels, ended a few months back. Is there any chance we could see a new Rebels or LEGION, like in the new DCU, at some point?
Man, I would love to do an LEGION series. You know, that's what I wanted the title to be, of course, on Rebels. And for a variety of reasons, we didn't go that way. But yeah, I'd really like to pick back up with those guys. I don't see it happening, you know, even within the next year. But maybe, you know, maybe sometime after that. It all depends. And if Blue Beetle, you know, becomes a sleeper hit or something, and New Guardians keeps going along, I might not have the extra bandwidth to do another book, so we'll see. But yeah, I would love to pick back up on those guys. If nothing else, I could easily see a story arc in New Guardians or in Blue Beetle that features Vril Dox and company. That guy was the funnest guy to write. Oh my God. It was like, you know, I imagine it's like writing Lex Luthor. You know, he was just so fun to be bad, you know?
Oh, definitely. He's one of my favorite characters of the book.
Yep.
Lastly, I wanted to touch on, at the end of Rebels, the issue with Lobo having Red Ring wasn't really resolved in whether he'd actually wear it or not. Do you think he ever actually would wear the ring? And if he could, perhaps he could show up in the New Guardians at some point?
Yeah. Now, that one I have been thinking about. And I'm not sure, you know, if Milligan is thinking about doing something in Red Lanterns, because that's the other natural place where that, you know, dangling plot thread would be picked up on. So, I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. I had a whole thing, you know, that was going to happen in Rebels with these clones, Zarnians, and, you know, it was going to be all crazy. And then we thought, you know what, the storyline is so big, we should really do it in Green Lantern Corps. And so we saved it for Green Lantern Corps, but then, of course, the whole, you know, relaunch got in the way. So, you know, we really should pick up on that. I think that we stated in Rebels that Lobo wouldn't be in a big hurry to do that, because basically he'd be, you know, enslaving himself the minute he put that red ring on. You know, it's kind of a one-way ticket that ring is. So, you know, I think he'd really have to have his back to the wall. And what I had planned actually was that, you know, the clone Zarnian race knows that he's the one that killed them, you know, the first time around. And so they come after him, and when he's, you know, having to fight, you know, 10,000 Lobos, then he figures, okay, I better put the ring on. But we never quite got to that moment.
Even with functional immortality, 10,000 of his own race wouldn't be an easy fight.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like tough. Sounds like a good storyline, actually.
Yeah, it would have been fun, huh? We'll see.
Maybe you should just every couple months, just send us a book of your notes on storylines so we can get excited about them.
Yeah, really looking forward to this new Guardians book, and also Blue Beetle. Can't wait to read them.
Oh, right. Cool.
Thanks, man. Well, we're going to go to Andrew. Andrew, you have a couple of questions?
Yeah. Hey there, Tony.
Hey.
What can you tell us about the reshuffling of titles leading up to the reboot? I think you've answered this in a couple of other interviews, but in your own words, like how did you end up with the New Guardians when Peter went back to Kor and is New Guardians the book that you wanted?
When we finally, I knew there had been talk about doing the reboot, and I had talked to Dan DiDio a few times when we've been to dinner or something. He had mentioned the idea of it, and it was just such a big, ballsy idea that we weren't really sure if his bosses would sign off on it. But once that all became clear that we were going to go that way, then, you know, Eddie Braganza called me up and said, look, you know, how would you like to do the Kyle Rayner book, you know, with featuring the other cores and everything? And I thought, well, I think I'm really happy doing Green Lantern Corps, you know. But what he said to me was that of all the characters that I had been handling, he really liked my take on Kyle. And that seemed to be the voice that I was getting, you know, best out of all of them. And I kind of, you know, I don't know if my Kyle is any more special than anybody else's or anything like that, but I do feel a connection to that character because he's, you know, he's like us, basically.
Yeah.
He's the most accessible, normal, down-to-earth, and sensitive of the Green Lanterns, you know? And I love that about him. And so that kind of made sense to me. And also the fact that I had kind of stolen Green Lantern Corps from Pete in the first place. And I love Pete. He's the best guy. And he was doing such a great job with it that I kind of felt like, okay, fine. You know, I've been lucky enough to keep his seat warm, basically. So, you know, I was like, fine, let's do it. The other cores I wasn't so sure about, to be real honest. Some I got a handle on more than others. You know, some are still a mystery to me. I'm waiting to find out from Jeff what's the deal with the Indigo Corps.
Yeah.
And I know that Jeff has a big Larfleet story planned for not too far down the road that's going to also, you know, reveal a lot about that character. So, yeah, so there was a little trepidation involved. But the more that we talked through plans, and especially once Pat McCallum became editor of Green Lantern, of New Guardians, and he's brought a lot of energy and just sort of demanded, let's make this thing really widescreen, really big. It's all taken on a life of its own. I'm actually really excited about these first four issues. There's like really big stuff going on every issue, and each one has a great cliffhanger ending. You know, it's very balls to the wall stuff. So, you know, I'm glad how it turned out. But I think really the driving force on that decision was just that Eddie felt like I had a handle on Kyle, and if we were going to do a Kyle book, I was the guy to do that.
I've talked to Eddie, and he's a huge Kyle fan. He's got his back.
I love Kyle. I used to edit or assistant edit JLA when Grant Morrison was writing the book, and that was, I think, when I really got a handle on that character, just from reading Grant's, you know, take on him. And
it's phenomenal.
So that's what really informed my Ron Mars and I are good friends, and I was reading his stuff when he first came on Green Lantern, you know, so I'm not selling his stuff short at all. He made that character. But for whatever reason, working on JLA was the thing that really made the character kind of click in my head. You know, and on the other hand, with Blue Beetle, they gave me that one. Again, Eddie Braganza, who's Guatemalan, we worked together in the office when I was in editorial over there, and he knows that I'm Puerto Rican. Nobody else would ever guess that I'm Puerto Rican because I'm whiter than the whitest white man. And, you know, there's not anything obviously Latino about me, but, you know, Spanish was my first language. I was born in Puerto Rico, and my family's definitely Puerto Rican, you know, in our culture. And so Jaime's not Puerto Rican. I know that much. But at least Eddie felt like I had an angle on the Latino experience and you know, family life and things like that. And that was another one where I was kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do this one, you know. I'm not Mexican-American, you know. It's a big difference, and I know because I've worked with plenty of Mexicans. You know, they speak a different type of Spanish and, you know, and all of that. But I shouldn't have worried because it's turned out that working on that book has been a joy, and it's also made me feel more in touch with my roots than I have been in years.
Cool. All right. You kind of touched on a little bit that Kyle's going to sort of go rogue when he kind of puts together the team and does his thing. But what can you tell us at this point, and I know it's early, so probably not much, but about the general mission statement of the New Guardians without getting into spoilers? Because Kyle's historically had some of his strongest material on Earth. And will Earth be kind of the focus of the book for a while?
Yeah, let me think what I want to tell you on this here. Gosh, when the book comes out in 2 weeks. You know what? Okay, I'm gonna spoil a little something here. It's not that much, but I'll set up the mystery for you. And basically, it's that in the first few, the opening scene of New Guardians, we see, you know, Ganthet delivered the ring, the last power ring to Kyle, you know, and Kyle kind of is a natural with it to some extent, just because of his artistic skills and stuff. But more, the focus of that is more that Kyle and Ganthet have a special bond that no Lantern has ever had with a Guardian, yeah, you know, before or since. And that's important to where this book is going. And then we jump to the present, and we see in a number of quick vignettes that there's a Sinestro Corpsman out there doing his, you know, scary Sinestro thing, and all of a sudden in the middle of terrorizing some folks, his ring just flies off. It says, you know, Sinestro Corpsman invalid, searching for new, you know, candidate, and off it goes, you know, leaves him in the lurch, you know, at the worst possible time. And we cut to a Red Lantern who's doing his Red Lantern thing, spitting up, you know, fire and all, you know, and all of a sudden his red ring flies off just all on its own, you know, invalid, off it goes, and he drops dead because that's what happens when you take off the red ring. And we go to a Star Sapphire, and the same thing. It's like, oh my God, you know, at different places, a random member of each corps is suddenly finding their ring just fly off on its own, like it's got a mind of its own, and go looking for a new wearer. And then we cut to Earth, and Kyle's in the midst of doing some cool stuff, you know, being Green Lantern and, you know, going about his business. And all of a sudden, you know, a blue ring comes up, says, Kyle, you've been chosen. And a red ring comes up, Kyle Rayner, you've been chosen. And all of a sudden, he's surrounded by six different colored rings, all of them saying, Kyle Rayner, you've been chosen. And, you know, what the hell? What just happened? And not only that, but on their heels comes, you know, a member of each one of those corps wondering, you know, why did Kyle just steal their rings? You know, and how quickly can I kill him for doing that? So,
cool.
And that's, that's the mystery and the moment that touches off the whole story, is why did suddenly a ring from every single ring corps come to Kyle Rayner and pronounce him fit to be, you know, a Red Lantern and a Blue Lantern and a, you know, an Orange Lantern even. And, you know, and why did this happen, and how can he, you know, somehow solve that mystery before these very angry folks, you know, try and kill him and take back their rings. So that's the, you know, that's the thing that initiates this whole odyssey.
It's quite a premise.
And they kind of, you know, they have to figure out then, you know, what force could possibly go around and just take a power ring from a lantern. You know, that's no small feat at all. And why did this happen, and et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be a mystery within a mystery. It's going to unfold for the first year of the book. And by the end of that, I think we've got a really cool reason why this happened and why these guys all had to pull together. At the end of the day, the Guardians of Oa have not been the greatest caretakers of the universe, you know? As wonderful as they are, as great as the Green Lantern Corps is, you guys know that it seems like every time they turn around, they bring another plague down on our heads.
Yeah.
And then maybe, just maybe, the universe might be better off with some new Guardians. And so that's kind of why the title starts to make sense after a while. Because if Kyle can pull together a team that's like the UN of Ring Corps, you know, with a member from each one, and they can actually get along and get something done together instead of trying to all kill each other, then maybe there's hope, you know, for the future.
Yeah, I'm sold.
Cool.
A couple of rapid-fire geeky questions for you.
All right.
Consider this. If John and Guy are both honor guard right now, and Hal, for now, is a man without a sector, and Sinestro is, I don't know, assigned to his own sector for now, Kyle, currently, right now, is the only active Green Lantern assigned to Earth. Does this now make him the sole Green Lantern of 2814 right now?
No. And that, I think, is more of a... something that's going to be dealt with in Green Lantern Corps. I don't think that we can consider John and Guy no longer representing 2814. And in fact, Kyle's mission now is going to make him renegade. He's not going to be well regarded by the Guardians. You know, the last thing they want is one of their own trying to replace them, more or less. You know, at the end of the day. As for who represents Earth, that's a question best left to Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps. And Kyle is definitely not going to be the official Green Lantern of Earth. He's going to be the Green Lantern that they want to shut down.
Gotcha. All right. All seven rings on one person. Does that equal white light? And if not, why not?
I think it might if you had control of all seven. But that's not an easy thing to do. You know, Krona put on all seven rings in War of the Green Lantern, but of course he's a very extraordinary entity. If a normal lantern or human tried that, there's no telling what would happen. So I think maybe you could work up to the point where it would equal white light, but we're not at that point, and we won't be for a while.
All right, Tony, last question. I would be remiss in doing this opportunity to talk to a disservice if I didn't at least bring this up. Now, I know a lot of this is casualty of timing, the bigger events going on, the rejuggling of books and all that. But man, I mean, Sinestro gave Kyle's mother space cancer, killed her, and yet we have Sinestro kicking his ass in GLC and then Kyle kind of defending him later on. And we never did quite get the scene, and this isn't your fault, we never quite got the scene where Kyle found out that Sinestro was, or I'm sorry, that Natu was Sinestro's daughter, yet a few months later we have Natu breaking up with him. I gotta be honest, these have been some tough times for Kyle. So to me and just all the Kyle fans out there, what can you tell us about what's coming on the horizon to soothe our minds and our hearts?
And can we explicitly say, can we just get a rematch with Sinestro, please? Because I feel like the Red Sox just got kicked around the World Series.
That would go a long way.
Well, now doesn't Kyle know that about Sornik?
Well, in the chronology of Green Lantern Corps, she found out, didn't tell anybody, and then the first time we found out that he knew was actually in the storyline you wrote with the Weaponer.
Oh, man, I wonder if I just assumed something I shouldn't have, because I kind of thought he knew that. Maybe she just mumbled it one night while she was sleeping next to him.
In the act.
Sinestro's my dad.
Who's your daddy? Sinestro. Oh, okay.
No. Jesus. That's perfect. That's the scene that got cut, unfortunately. We couldn't show that, but that's perfect. Boy, that would kind of end the moment, though, wouldn't it? What?
Well, maybe not. Well, yeah, Kyle's a pretty weird guy. He's probably, keep saying that. That's good. I like that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have a Kyle Sinestro rematch planned. You know, and part of this, of course, is that I don't know exactly where Jeff's going with Green Lantern, and where, you know, or where Pete's going with Korra. And I think that the whole Sinestro as Green Lantern storyline, you know, would have to play out a little bit further before I could try and do that.
Yeah, good story.
So that might be a...
I mean,
it's a good moment maybe to shoot for in the second year or something like that, but I don't see it happening even before that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good hook then, right? Because if now Kyle's the renegade and he used to be like the poster boy, and now you have Sinestro, who was the renegade and is now the poster boy, you know, it's, I guess, I don't want to...
That's awesome.
Irony,
yeah.
It's a good idea, yeah.
Yeah. I got to call my editor right after I get those.
But, I mean, we do. I mean, I know a lot of fans had asked about this. I mean, I don't need to jump on Andrew's question. Yeah. But, I mean, there was some issue about Kyle's mother was killed by Sinestro. And there's a certain logic to, you know, he's not – when he's trying to get Sinestro to help him out, he wouldn't have mentioned it. Like, you killed my mom, so do me a favor. Kind of like, you owe me one for killing my mom. But, you know, later you think it would have been brought up, especially with all this – the conflict about – I mean, you wrote the – Aftermath issues, which are actually pretty good. I like those Aftermath issues better than I like the crossover, because I think it really dealt with the issues that should have been dealt with and stuff, and that was pretty cool. But at no point is Kyle like, listen, everybody, I'm taking his side, but he killed my mom, so that really should give you pause about where my head is at.
Yeah, well, it's that's all out there to be dealt with at some point, and so but I need to I need to find out how things are going to shake out in Death's book first, and but yeah, that I definitely got to stick a pin in that one and then come back to it.
Hey, listen, I'll still be a 20 at the next convention if I have to.
All right, that's fine by me. All right. Any more questions, or rather, ideas I can steal?
Well, Eric, you want to continue on? What was the rest of the questions you wanted to ask?
No, I mean I mean it was funny because when you got on GLC, we were all kind of excited about. I mean, some of us. I mean, John Stewart getting a little bit of spotlight, and I know in interviews you said to give him some spotlight, and you ended up giving Kyle spotlight, which I'm completely happy with. Kyle is a great guy. I mean, him and I are really good friends, so I'm really happy that you get a lot of spotlight. John Stewart, again, was that a character kind of got away from you, or were you always kind of planning to do the Mogo thing and it kind of fell out, or when did it happen in there?
No, well, the Mogo thing kind of surprised us all. When we got together to plan out the War of the Green Lantern storyline, that actually just came up in that, plotting session.
Summit.
We were, it just kind of bubbled up organically out of, trying to figure out where the story was going, and it wasn't like we wanted to have John kill yet another planet or anything like that. It was just it somehow at that moment it made sense that he was the guy who would do the hard thing, take the shot, that basically it made sense for that moment. I wanted to do more stuff with him. And like I said, when I talked to you guys before, I really wanted to get him a new love interest and more of a personal life. I feel like I managed to get some cool, tough moments for him and just some moments where he's a real badass, but I also wanted to give him more of a personal life and a soft side and that kind of thing. And it just never quite happened. I think if we hadn't done the reboot, if we hadn't changed books, then I would have had a chance to do a storyline like that. This whole thing is a funny thing because, whatever storylines you're working on, they kind of get hijacked sometimes by overtaken by events, I'm sure, I got the feeling that Dwayne McDuffie probably felt that way intensely when he was working on Justice League of America, because it seemed like he never quite got a chance to do his own thing on that book. There were so many
things
that kept
changing
on it. I felt for him on that one. I'm not saying I had that experience on Green Lantern at all. It's been a freaking joy to work on Green Lantern Corps, but you just don't always get to the beats that you're hoping to do and the moments you're hoping for just because, you get overtaken by events.
Okay, yeah, and another maybe geeky Kyle-related question or promise. But another thing, Kyle got slapped around a little bit in the GLC. I mean, every time he showed up, it was either getting backhanded or dumped or kicked across the universe or begging Sinestro for his life and stuff like that. I just want some kind of reassurance that he's not going to be such a wet mop in New Guardians.
It's funny because you have different kinds of heroes, and you got sort of lantern jawed, tough, proactive guys like Hal, and those kind of heroes are great and everything, but they don't interest me as much, to be honest. I like heroes that have some vulnerability to them or a softer side, and that's something that interests me about Kyle, I mean, to kind of take this maybe a little too far, when I was growing up, I was always interested in historical figures, like Gandhi and Martin Luther King, who were willing to turn the other cheek and take the hit in order to win the bigger, struggle. Or for that matter, you can bring it back to Jesus, who, they they killed him dead, but yet he won the war, you know, in a manner of speaking. That soft power, that kind of thing, you know, that was always interesting to me. And so I don't know if this is making any sense here.
No,
but,
are you telling us Kyle's going to die for his sins? Is that what's happening in this conversation?
No, not so much that. Just that you know, they don't always have to be the alpha male, and they don't always have to, you know. I like it when what's his name? Bruce Willis in Die Hard. You know, there was a guy that was a punching bag, you know, who his feet are all cut up. It looks like he's, you know, getting beaten every time. And yet, you know, that was a different kind of action hero when that movie first came out. You know, he really went through the ringer and still, you know, won. And that was kind of cool. So I kind of like that kind of hero. And maybe that's why Kyle gets his ass handed to him every other, you know, issue. But, you know, it kind of humanizes them. I want imperfect and sensitive, heroes.
I can live with that. Kyle is John McClane.
Oh, can I?
It's a nice save there.
Yeah, and I want to say something.
And
yeah,
in fact,
please go.
Well, if I might just elaborate a little more, one of the things I want to get across, and hopefully it won't be overtaken by events, so to speak, is that Kyle is unique. The ring did not seek him because the ring's artificial intelligence sensed a fearlessness in him or something. Gambit gave him that ring because he saw something in him that you couldn't quantify. And it's an openness to his emotions, an artist's ability to see things from many other points of view, you know, to put himself in someone else's shoes, to feel what somebody else is feeling, even if it's, you know, anathema to you, if, you know, that kind of thing. And it's the same thing that makes him an artist. And it's the same thing that makes him, at the end of the day, the only Lantern in any core who has a chance of mastering the entire emotional spectrum, you know, because he has that open emotional openness, that ability to put himself, you know, in another person's shoes. He's the guy who I can see being able to wield red, yellow, blue, you name it, someday. You know, that potential is there. He may never be as strong with the green ring as Hal, but Hal wouldn't be able to wield, you know, every single hue in the spectrum, and Kyle just might. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I hope so.
Yeah,
that's what makes Kyle unique in the core.
No, that's a good way to explain. Actually, it's a good way to reconstitute Kyle, because, you know, as Kyle fans, you know, we've all kind of a lot of us have sat in the corner in the dark, hoping that he wouldn't be murdered. You know, for the past 7 years of since Rebirth and stuff, and, you know, just watching every issue carefully and analyzing whatever happened to him. So, but that's actually a really good way to recontextualize him in the wake of, you know, the Rainbow Corps and stuff like that. I want to ask, and again, Kyle questions, and maybe more of an editorial side. What was the impetus for giving Kyle a featured series? I mean, obviously they want to feature the core, and it was kind of a good idea to put a headlining character in it. But why give Kyle a series? Because not that Emerald Warriors was essentially Guy Gardner's series, but it was. So technically they're kind of cramming all the other known Lanterns into this off-series, giving Sinestro and Hal their highlight and giving Kyle a highlight. I mean, what was the impetus behind that? I mean, do you know editorially?
I actually don't. Being here in Tampa, I don't get to sit in on those meetings. And I can only imagine that they said, okay, well, in this new 52, we know we want to have Jeff doing the main Green Lantern book. We know we want to keep Green Lantern Corps going. What else do we want to do Lantern-wise? And they must have, you know, decided, why don't we do a book that focuses on all the other corps, you know? And then I don't know how they decided that Red Lantern was part of the mix, although I'm excited about it. Milligan's terrific. So that probably was the first decision. And then once they knew that they wanted to do a Rainbow Coalition book or whatever you want to call it, to, you know, Taste the Rainbow, then it was probably a decision on who do we want to headline that one. And they probably said, well, you know, Pete owns Guy Gardner at this point. He just has that character, you know, down. So Pete Tomasi, Guy Gardner, Green Lantern Corps, okay, fine. And then I guess it was just a question if they wanted to have, John or Kyle headline the other one. I'm not sure why, you know. So there must be some little flowchart of the decision process on that one. It might have come down to the fact to their take that maybe I had a good angle on Kyle, and that made sense.
Yeah, maybe it was all this.
You know, maybe if I had gotten all my John Stewart moments that I wanted to, I'd be writing about John Stewart now. So.
And maybe it was all the tear-stained letters I sent them over the past half decade that was convincing them finally to give. One question that's kind of – I mean, you're kind of implying, or you're sort of saying that finally – and I say finally as in someone who's reading Green Lantern comics, you know, and talking about them pretty nonstop for a couple of years now, that the titles, the interconnectivity between the titles was cool, but as you said, a lot of us, the readers, were kind of recognizing that they were limiting stories, you know, and you know, writers like you who've expressed this would be a great idea, and we're like, that would be a great idea, and the ideas never kind of happened because of crossovers and because of poor Mogo having to die, et cetera, et cetera. But now that the titles aren't as interconnected, is there kind of like freedom, or is there kind of like, I mean, what's the advantage of having the titles not really connect? Because it, I mean, you're saying – I mean, you've said it a couple times. You're not sure where they're going with this. And for me, that's like – it's not making me nervous. It's kind of liberating me, like, oh, I don't have to follow exactly what's happening to understand what everybody's doing with different titles and stuff. I mean, was this something you'd have preferred, or is this a kind of a guarantee you can give us that we can just kind of read New Guardians and not have to worry about reading all the other ones?
I think I've heard there's a two-year moratorium on big events. Is that correct?
No. It's not as cut –
cut and dry.
You know – yeah, it's not that. It's not exactly that. But you're right about your sense that this really does equal more freedom and opportunity than a bad thing. The books were necessarily tied together just recently, you know, because of the War of the Green Lanterns and also through the you know, something as big as Black as Night would just, you know, run across everything. One of the nice things about getting Pat McCallum on as editor is that he's kind of new to the Green Lantern group, and he kind of made a firewall there for my book. He just said, "Look, we're going to do our own thing, and we're going to do the best Green Lantern book out of the four Lantern books that are being done." You know, that's how he puts it, anyways. He's like, you know, that's our mission. You know, we're gonna show up the other guys. And I don't know if that's really gonna, you know, at the end of the day be the case, but I like that attitude. And so as it turns out, I've got new villains coming in. I've got stuff that's really independent of anything that Pete and Jeff are planning. In fact, I'm not seeing Pete and Jeff's scripts nearly as often as I used to. And that, I think, really has yielded a sense of freedom and excitement, you know? I'm just going to go out there and make my book as wild and big as possible. I'm going to try and do something that makes each one of those cores interesting, aside from the fact that they're just a different color. You know, it's not going to be a book where it's just, you know, hey, look, his ring shoots a different colored beam, because that's just boring. It has to be like what makes the Star Sapphires interesting in and of themselves, you know, or the Red Lanterns or whatever, you know. So, yeah, it's really become its own thing. And it's funny because I almost had to be dragged into that. I was so used to working in lockstep with the other guys, and it's comfortable. And with somebody as good as Jeff, you know, helming that boat, you know, you kind of – there's a sense of security to it. But it's a lot more exciting to just go off and do my own thing, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, I think I'm good. Feel a little better. Just right. Keep in mind the rematch idea. I think would be a great, really deep storyline. Define your career, if anything. But yes, that's all I want to say.
All right. Yeah. No. Definitely. Next time I talk to Pat, I'm going to bring that up. And I love what you were saying. How, you know, what a great turnaround. But now Sinestro's on the inside, and Kyle's a renegade. That's such a great, you know, swapping.
I don't even want story credit. Please just do it, and that's prize enough. Thank you.
All right.
Oh, we have one last guy. It's Brandon. Brandon, go ahead.
These guys have obviously shown that they're huge Kyle buffs, but personally, I would love to get some more Star Sapphire action in here. So as the Star Sapphire fan, can you give us any kind of hint on your take on Fatality, and if we'll get maybe a Carol Ferris cameo or Mary popping back up? Because I need some more love in these books.
I definitely thought you just said Mary Poppins back up. I'm like, are you writing that? That's awesome.
Well, you know, I'm still trying to figure out my angle on Fatality because, you know, she's an interesting character because of the big turnaround that she had. You know, she used to be hunting Green Lanterns, and now, you know, she's kind of, you know, seen the light and changed her ways. But that background and those skills are still there. So in one sense, she's a real badass on the team, you know, because she's good at doing stuff like that. You know, if she could get over on Green Lanterns before, you know, then she's a formidable opponent. But she's also kind of one of the more level-headed, reasonable folks that Kyle's interacting with, especially when you consider that, you know, you turn from her and you got guys like Arkillo and Glomulus and Bleez. You know, there's not a lot of reasoning with them, right? You know, or getting them to go with the game plan. So, so in one sense, you know, she will be, you know, at least somebody reasonable that he can work with. But as for, you know, where that's going to lead, I'm still finding my way on that. You know, I mean, one way could be that, you know, would there be any sort of a love interest there, or is that just too weird? I don't know. I'm still trying to nail that one down. You got any suggestions for me?
Well, how many?
Oh, go ahead. Hook them up. Yeah, I would love it.
Yeah. How much freedom are you getting in terms of defining not just the different characters, but kind of what the? Because it looks like you got the Rainbow Book. I mean, how much freedom are you getting in terms of defining the kind of stipulations? I mean, and not to be like a super geek fan, but some of us super geek fans, yeah, you know, in our darkest moments, kind of look at the content of the Rainbow Corps. We're not quite sure what these guys can do and really what their MOs are. You know what I mean? The Sapphire seems to do one thing, one issue, and then the Blue Lanterns can do this, but then they can't do that. And then Kyle's standing there and he can't do anything with his ring. And, you know, the next issue, Satan Walker's making giant constructs and stuff. And I mean, how much definition are you getting just in the Corps themselves? Are you the guy now?
Well, I actually think I am. because I agree that a lot of that has been uneven from series to series. So this is a book that's going to nail some of that down. However, I'm also waiting to see what Jeff does with the Indigo Corps, because I know that he's got, or tried rather, because there's a big revelation coming about them. And then also with Larfleeze, you know, he's got a major storyline in the works on him that I'm waiting to see on that one. But I'm also not just waiting and not doing anything with them. Basically, I'm going to try and do something new and definitive with each one of those cores. And if, you know, when I turn it in, if they bat it down, then fine. But that's not going to stop me from throwing stuff out there. Cool. I want them all to feel distinct from each other, and, you know, so it's not just a change of color, you know, but it's still a guy with a ring, you know, and a bodysuit. And I do feel a lot of freedom to do that. In fact, I think they'll be disappointed with me if I don't deliver on that score. So, you know, there's that. You know, and now that you've got me thinking about Fatality, though, the other thing is that I'm wondering if – I think Fatality is – someone who's still coming to terms with being part of the Star Sapphire Corps. Like, I could see that she would be a little conflicted about being a Star Sapphire, or that there might be situations that bring up some of those old, you know, feelings, or, you know, or whether or not she even feels worthy of being a Star Sapphire if she was that kind of person before, you know, stuff like that. I think can come up for her.
She never really dealt with it. She just kind of went into the crystal and came out. And
well, let's see it. Oh, it's brainwashing, right? I mean, that there's an element of that. I mean, not to be like stepping on your toes, or whatever. But I mean, it seems to be there's an element of the Star Sapphires where they seem to be the nicest ones. I mean, except for Miri blowing up planet just to get people to kind of go out again. But you know, they do run around saving lives and they seem really pleasant. But it's indoctrination. I mean, they're all being kidnapped and turned into these people they're not. I mean, Fatality was in no way, shape, or form someone who was loving anything, you know, and then all of a sudden she shows up one day like a love robot. So, I mean, that definitely seems like something she'd be fighting against.
Right. But you know, I also want to, you know, address that being a Star Sapphire isn't what it might seem on the surface. That issue of New Guardians, I've got the Indigo guy, you know, around Fatality pretty effortlessly. You know, she's a good fighter, and And he says something like, you know, aren't you a little, you know, rough for somebody who, you know, represents love or something? And, you know, and she's like, you know, don't be an idiot. There's nothing more cruel than a love spurned, you know. Love's got that side of it, too. And so, you know, yeah, they might seem like the nicest or most benevolent in one sense, but love is you know, has driven many a murder, you know. It's got a dark side to it as well.
If anyone could retain their former selves, it would definitely be Fatality. She could probably have the will to pull some of that old stuff in.
Yeah, yeah. She was a very strong character, for sure. A very driven character. So, yeah, she's going to have to, I think, you know, it's got to go beyond just, you know, she steps in the crystal and everything was fine. That's just too easy and can't really stick, you know. And it would be nice for her to question, you know, why she does this and then come to you know, some accommodation with being a Star Sapphire that really works for her and that wasn't just imposed upon her, you know?
That sounds awesome. I'm already excited.
Good. I like her. I haven't figured her out completely, like I said, but I like her a lot.
Switching gears for a second, back to Blue Beetle. A lot of fans really fell in love with the Albuquerque stuff by Rogers and the Matt Sturges run. And obviously you're excited for writing the character, but there's still that very vocal bunch out there that's disappointed that Ted Kord isn't involved in the New 52 at all. Are you writing for just the Jaime fans that read the Albuquerque stuff, or the New 52 readers that are just coming in the comics, or are you trying to, you know, hook those Ted readers also?
You know, I hope that the Ted Kord fan club gives me a chance. I really do. And I love Ted Kord, too. Justice League International was really hitting at the time when I first was getting into comics, so it was a huge favorite of mine. But that said, Jaime Reyes is the Blue Beetle right now, and I've got to give him all the love I can. And we haven't, you know, done away with Ted Kord having been Blue Beetle or something, but we're just not even going to go there right now. We're not going to get into the, you know, that there was previous Blue Beetles. That's part of the problem that DC Comics has had, not Blue Beetle itself, but just that you know, you needed a scorecard to know which Robin you were dealing with or which Flash or whatever, you know. And part of this reboot is just to simplify it, you know, and say, hey, if you're a new reader, if you're coming in, you know, this is all you got to know. Just, you know, and so that's why we're doing the Blue Beetle relaunch like we are. And I like Jaime a lot. That John Rogers, Raphael Albuquerque run actually was one of the biggest reasons that made me, you know, scared to take on this book, because it was so good, you know. It was the first book that I read whenever I got my box of comics, you know, from DC that month. And I can't match what they did. You know, I can only do justice to that character in my way, but I'm not even going to try. It'd be like, if, you know, 10 years from now, they did a Buffy revamp, you know, and I was trying to write Joss Whedon dialogue. No, that's not going to work, you know? So, you know, it's, I don't know if I'm making sense here. It's just, you know, that I really adored that run. So I want to try and grab some of what was working there and make Jaime stand on his own. And right now is really a good time for him, because weirdly enough, I think he's got a higher profile now than when he had his own book. You know, he's in Brave and the Bold and had some great appearances there and you know, even on Smallville. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, I think now's a good time for that character. And also, you know, when I was a kid, like, you know, I'm 40-ish right now, okay? So when I was a kid in Puerto Rico, looking around for, you know, some sort of role model in pop culture for, you know, Latin kid or something, it was like Ricky Ricardo and, you know, Big Punch on Chips or something. And that was it, you know? And the thought that we could put a, you know, somebody out there, now that there's a much bigger Hispanic community, you know, that some young Latino kid could look to and, you know, and say, hey, that guy's like me, that's a cool feeling. So I want to give him as much love and make him stand on his own as possible. And later on, then maybe we can address the whole Ted Kord thing, because he was awesome too, but, you know.
Right.
There you are.
Out of curiosity, I don't want to ask you why Blue Beetle, but were you offered any other titles? And, you know, because you did a great job with Flashpoint Aquaman, I figure. And while we know Jeff had his grip on Aquaman, were there any other titles you had in mind for this new reboot, or was just Blue Beetle your entire focus?
Oh, dude, man, I have wanted to write Aquaman for years now. I don't know why. I think it has to do with that old animated show that they had, you know, in the I think late 60s, early 70s.
Oh, really? That one?
Oh, yeah, man. You know, with Tusky and, you know.
Topo?
And riding that giant, he riding around in the giant seahorse and stuff. I loved that thing when I was a kid. It was the Superman Aquaman Adventure Hour, I think. And so I just naturally assumed that Aquaman was as big a superhero as Superman, you know, because he had the equal billing. Duh. So, you know, it didn't quite work out that way. But so, yeah, Aquaman would have been one that I was really, you know, keeping my fingers crossed for. But if I was going to bow out of the way to anybody, Jeff Johns and Ivan Reis, yeah, that's just fine, you know. But don't think I'm not looking at that book like, you know, hey, if you guys ever get tired, I would love to pick it up from them. But getting offered other ones, no. These two were the ones that got offered, and I'm happy that.
You should just start your own creator-owned series called H2O Bro and just tell all the stories you want to tell. Get Pat Gleason to draw to her. He's just as obsessed with Aquaman. Yeah.
Really? Oh, cool. Yeah,
he drew it for a little bit.
Yeah, he was. I think the last time we talked to him, he was just like, yeah, I love Aquaman. He wouldn't say anything else. We were trying to get him talking about other things. That's all he would talk about.
But I like happy Aquaman, you know?
Yeah.
Angry Aquaman, I get it. I get the whole angry, you know, warrior king approach, you know? But I would want to do happy Aquaman on a big gay seahorse. You know,
well,
you've got to be a man to do that.
All the Aquaman for the past 10 years has been like, it's almost like the character hates himself as much as he thinks the public hates him. You know, like he's just so angry that people think he's a joke that he's like, I'm not going to tell a single joke. So it'd be nice to have someone on board who's just like, nah, he's Aquaman. Like, why don't we just okay with that? Like, we don't have to hate the guy.
Yeah. Unapologetic, you know.
I wanted to ask you about DCU Online. How does the creative process work, switching between issues with you and Marv?
Marv and I and Ben Abernathy, the editor on that, would just get on the phone and talk through, you know, the overall, you know, storyline. And gosh, I'm trying to remember how we broke that down. But we wound up just generating a document that we were bouncing around between us, you know, to get the story, the major story beats down. And then we just decided it probably made sense. At first, we were going to split each issue, you know, and he would do the first 10 pages, I'd do the last 10 pages. That kind of thing is difficult, though, because if you do it where you're both writing on the same issue, you kind of stay on the same page even more, but it's weird. You're waiting for the other guy and stuff. And it just became more, I think, convenient work-wise, you know, just more practical. To switch, you know, issues. And then unfortunately with Flashpoint and the relaunch hitting, I just had to, you know, leave that series. I just couldn't do all of it all at once.
Oh, well, that's too bad. Yeah. I was going to totally. I played that game and I was going to totally try to pitch you on putting my character in there, but c'est la vie.
It was fun though. I think my last issue probably already came out. I think it was something like issue 12 or 14 or something like that. It was fun while it lasted though. And I'm really interested in all the gaming stuff and, you know, I want to learn more about that. So it was cool from that aspect.
I guess to wrap up my questions, I already mentioned that I'm big on the love, so I'm kind of confused on why Sorenik is so angry at Kyle. She didn't find out about him lying to her till, you know, afterwards. So I don't understand why she was so, you know, angry at him for grabbing Sinestro and saving her life.
Well, she's got major league issues with Sinestro, you know, in the first place, just hating him because he's the guy that, you know, he's Space Hitler, you know, from her planet, you know. So there's stuff like that. Like, you know, when she was first introduced, you know, she had a problem with even being, you know, his successor, you know, and that his, the taint that he had put on being a Green Lantern and on his world just kind of hung over everything that she did. So then to find out on top of that later on that she's his daughter, you know, I think she's got really, you know, big stuff to work through, just on that. So for her to get in a situation where Kyle had to get the man that she hates the most and feels most conflicted about to come and bail her out, is weird, because it might have been necessary, but she still felt kind of betrayed, you know? Like, of all people to you know, for you to go and get to save me, you know, you had to get the guy that I hate the most and have the, you know, the most... I mean, I don't think she understands why she's as angry as she is, but there's just a lot of raw emotion involved with that. That was what I was going for. You know, if it didn't come across, then I, you know, that's on me, but that's kind of what I was going for, that there's just such a big ball of raw emotions there that hasn't been worked through, you know? And, anyways, that was it.
With the, I think it's the first Aftermath issue, we saw the Star Sapphire try to reunite them for that brief second, and then it got worse. Personally, do you think, you know, there's that chance for redemption, that they're gonna, you know, push you? Are you going to push Kyle back in that direction towards Sora Nik? Because she's kind of that was a phase, and now the time is to move on.
Hey, I
like her a lot, and she's a different kind of girlfriend for her, you know. You know, there's that, but I don't want to give away too much, because that's going to be a storyline coming up, probably around issue 7 or 8 or something of New Guardians. Is that with the Guardians not so happy with Kyle for what he's out there doing? You know, they have to figure out how are they going to deal with him. You know, and they're talking amongst themselves. Well, we should send the Alpha Lanterns. That's what they're for. You know, we got someone in the core that you know, isn't following instructions, you know, that's what the Alpha Lanterns are for. And somebody else is saying, oh, screw that, let's send the whole Corps after him, you know, this is really bad. And then, you know, somebody else says, no, let's do this, you know, surgically. Let's hit him where he's most sensitive. And they send Sorenik, you know. But, of course, she's going to be totally conflicted about what she's up to, you know, even if she was still pissed off at him, you know. And then what I'm wanting to do in that storyline is that they're not just going to send her alone. They're going to give her a partner to go do this with, and he's going to be a new Green Lantern character who's like this sort of real badass tracker, soldier, you know, fighter kind of guy. Basically the anti-Kyle, you know, where Kyle is open and warm and talkative. This guy is the strong, silent type, you know, but, of course, the funny thing is that while Sorenik's out there alone, you know, tracking him, camping out with this partner, blah, 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 she finds that she's attracted to this anti-Kyle, you know?
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah, well, of course.
Hilarity ensues, you know?
He's probably got a six-pack. He's probably 9 feet tall. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His parents had a summer home.
All the shit that drove her crazy about Kyle, you know, all the whiny, you know, touchy-feely stuff about Kyle.
Yeah,
this guy didn't like that at all.
This guy doesn't read, can't draw a stick figure. She's like, I love it.
Right.
Well, you know what? I want to say that I liked the Kyle Sorenik relationship as much as a lot of people, because I feel like there was a kind of like interest there. You could definitely see when it first was happening, Sorenik was kind of desperate for someone to be with, and Kyle just doesn't like not being in a relationship, and they're both attractive people, you know. But whose idea was it to break them up? I mean, you suggest in interviews it's a weird relationship anyway, because, and it's true. She's a space surgeon, you know, from a dictator world, and he's like some artist in Brooklyn who works out. I mean, you know, you don't really see that in real life anyway. You know, I mean, every time you see that, it's like on TMZ, and it's like, why is Lindsay Lohan dating the construction worker in a rehab? You know, and that's what it kind of seems.
Right, right.
So was that your impetus? Was that the impetus of like whatever? Did Peter Tomasi get kind of grumpy because he set up the relationship in the first place?
No. It just seemed like the natural endpoint for that. It just, for whatever reason, I felt like that was just the, you know, the right way to go. But it wasn't anything that was imposed, and it had nothing to do with any other creator or editor, you know. I think I just felt like at that moment, you know, it had reached a breaking point.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned that Say might be coming back soon. Is that going to be a focal point in the series, where she's been and this journey Larfleeze has been going on, or is that more of a crossover point with the other series?
No, Sade's involvement in New Guardians is going to be it's at the core of the, you know, of the central arc of the book. It's actually really important to where the book is going and what's driving it. I don't want to say a whole lot more than that, but it gets back to her being close to Gansett and Gansett being close to Kyle, and that's, you know, that being such an important relationship, you know, a defining relationship for Kyle, is, you know, that Gansett is his mentor and friend, you know, and you know, you'll see what happens.
All right.
Can't wait.
All right. No, Eric, what were we going to say?
I'm going to say, does it turn out that Gantt and Sade are Kyle's secret parents? Is that the big reveal? Are they his actual?
They're very proud of how tall he is.
that's why Kyle's not mad that Sinestro killed his dad. He's like, you're not my real dad or mom, because you're not my real mom anyway. Sade's my mom. Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, that ain't it. But, you know, you'll see.
All right. Well, on that note, Tony, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad you stuck with us and had a tremendous amount of patience. And hopefully we'll have you back on the show in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks for inviting me again.
You got it. Oh, also, are you going to be on in New York Comic Con this year?
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm not going to have a table or booth, but I'll be doing, you know, booth time at DC, and I'm on a couple of panels. There's a Green Lantern panel and a Young Justice panel where I'll get to talk about Blue Beetle. So, you know, look for me.
All right, good. I hope to see you there again. I saw you last year.
Cool.
Hope to see you again. All right.
Awesome.
Have a good one.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Looking forward to later.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time, and please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/Roy Clark Method.
This magic green, it is the color green, it can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me, it says, how, what have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong, and don't make us wait.
I don't know if it was there ass fucking. I know there's a gay seahorse.
Okay,
is it called
doggy
daddy?
Style, not necessarily ass fucking.
Oh yeah, we're talking
West
about
all gays are in anal sex.
West assumes we're all.
How he learned Sinestro? How he learned Sinestro was his. Her dad. Like, ass well, fucking.
The other day. Yeah, he said, "Who's your daddy?" And I instantly thought doggy style. So,
every single time. Every single time Wes hears about any kind of sexual activity, he assumes it's anal sex.